go ahead.
Okay. So you were saying?
I was saying I meant to bring up two things. Number one was that my objection to the potential mistranslation or misrecording of the statement is still standing. You asserted that, in essence, if I understand you correctly, that it's absurd because you see these things repeated over and over. What I'm saying to you is that I offer the distinct possibility of a conspiracy, an evil conspiracy. I believe that Paul VI, whether you accept him or not, made an interesting point when he said that the smoke of Satan has entered the church. I think that without a doubt, the signs and the experiences that have happened after Vatican II closed showed that a large number of the people who took allegedly religious vows were not really sincere in their vows. They left the church, quote unquote, they left their vows, their statuses, as soon as they could. A large number of people became raving liberal Catholics. Church attendance fell. Quite a few things went wrong. I think what happened was is that the outward sign of the church was sort of an empty eggshell. It had much less of a core than we thought. Now, I also think that some of the more radical bad priests, Hans Kung and those types, managed to have interesting positions in positions of authority and controlling various bureaucracies. My position is that these people had a large influence on what official dissemination of documents was.
Okay.
And that they have worked malicious effects. Now, that does not mean to say that we deny every single thing we've seen on videotapes. By no means. I'll answer that in a moment if you wish. I do believe that if we believe the videos that we've seen and the photographs we've seen, that John Paul II certainly behaved in improper manners in many times and in many different locations.
Well, okay. Maybe I could respond to that. It is absurd because, number one, what you're saying is that essentially every issue of the official Vatican newspaper is basically engaging in a conspiracy to misrepresent what was actually said. That's absurd. Secondly, I cited the Latin for you in Vatican II, which is available. We have that. Anyone can find it. Okay, where it teaches these same heresies. Okay, and people can just get someone who may know it better than they to translate it, or they can see it there. It's a fact. It's there. Secondly, all of his public actions, which are on video, are perfectly in accord with all of this stuff. We don't even actually need to cite any of his speeches. The fact that heresy can be manifested by deed. St. Thomas Aquinas points out that if anyone were to worship at the tomb of Muhammad, he would be deemed an apostate. Okay, Benedict XVI, it's on video, and there are pictures of it. He prayed in a mosque toward Mecca, like the Muslims. That's a fact. We have a picture of it on our website, in our book. Okay, that's an act of apostasy. John Paul II was constantly praying with these schismatics and heretics, engaging in ecumenical prayer services. Okay, Benedict XVI greets them, gives them gifts, okay, exchanges letters of affection, etc. And so their actions confirm that this is exactly what they believe. There's no doubt about it. And furthermore, it's ridiculous. Oh, and also in their very public actions, they frequently cite their own speeches, like John Paul II will make reference to, you know, this speech or this meeting of Paul VI with the schismatic. And so he's citing the very speeches which you say really don't exist. And so we don't even need to even quote anything. We can just say he kissed the Koran, he holds interreligious prayer services, he expresses respect for false religions. And that's apostasy. He's not a Christian. That's totally and abundantly clear. If you wanted to respond, or I could ask you more questions.
You keep repeating the word absurd. The fact that you declare it to be absurd does not make it absurd. Someday, if you wish, you can read the 800 pages of my own. In case you're not aware, I'm digressing slightly. I was on the New York State Police for approximately 12 and a half years. There were 4 conspiracies to fire me. The reason I know that, because in the first 3 of those conspiracies, people informed me what was going on. They told me exactly what the state police was looking for, exactly how they were setting me up, and exactly what they were doing, and they said that their conscience was bothering them. The fourth conspiracy, two people did this. You can read the 800 pages of testimony in which I was ultimately fired after a hearing. And the point is, if you don't think that's a conspiracy, you don't understand what they are. People testified to the effect that they were taping my conversations, that they put tape recorders on the desk and spoke to me as friends, in which they were trying to get admissions that they could then use against me in the hearing. The point I'm simply making is conspiracies do exist. They do happen on occasion. Obviously, Abraham Lincoln was the victim of a conspiracy.
Well, I mean, we're very well aware of that. We believe in the existence of numerous conspiracies, and the what's going on in the Vatican II Church is a conspiracy.
Okay, fine, exactly my point. And what I'm saying is that I repeat the point. If there is this conspiracy, if there are those who intentionally misinterpret, misput out, misprint, etc., exactly what is supposed to be an official document, then we have a situation not where you cannot, that everything in the official document is discredited or dismissed or accepted, but where charity and justice require that we withhold judgment. Okay? Another point is, you have frequently stated, or shall I say used as supports, various opinions from the various saints, including St. Francis de Sales, St. Robert Bellarmine, and St. Thomas Aquinas. I understand perfectly that these men, having official status as saints in heaven, therefore have a certain quasi-authority, but I emphasize the word quasi. Their opinions are not infallible statements. This means that although you may offer them as supportive evidence, you cannot offer them, in my opinion, as conclusive evidence. If I disagree with Robert Bellarmine or St. Francis or St. Thomas, that does not put me outside the church, because unless, and this is a key point, unless they were miscopied, they also wrote things that were incorrect. I'm not accusing them of heresy. I'm saying that they might have offered things in speculative positions, which later...
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
It's true that the opinion of a saint on a particular topic is not necessarily conclusive, but it is on this topic. And the reason for that is that it's rooted in a dogma that heretics are not members of the church. And so it's simply an application of the truth that there's one faith in the church, that's something you reject, and that heretics are outside the church, defined infallibly by Pope Eugene IV. So someone cannot disagree with the teaching that a heretic cannot be the pope, because to do so is tantamount to denying that heretics are outside the church. And so it is conclusive because it's rooted in the infallible teaching of the chair of Peter. And so, but again, we've had the pictures of Benedict XVI in the synagogue. Okay, there's the video of it, reciting the Kaddish prayer with the Jews. Okay, taking part in Jewish worship. And I said, these are acts of apostasy, which totally confirm everything that they've been teaching for years. And your argument is not logical. To say that there are conspiracies that exist, that's true, no one denies that. But to say that every single speech that he writes is drastically rewritten, essentially, and has meaning that he never intended, that is absurd, because, number one, he's aware of these translations. We have pictures of him reading the very Laus Orator Romano. We cite the Latin text of Vatican II, anyone can verify it, and his encyclicals, that's available for people, which conforms to these translations. And it's perfectly in line with all of their public actions of apostasy. That is a fact. They accept pro-abortion people as Catholic. We recently posted the video on our website in which you have the, quote, Cardinal of Boston commemorating Ted Kennedy as the servant of Christ. So is O'Malley an apostate for commemorating someone who's pro-abortion, pro-gay marriage? He says he was a Catholic, that he's basically going to heaven, and that he's the servant of Christ. Is that apostasy on the part of O'Malley?
To judge him to have apostate, I would need to know inside his mind.
No, you don't. Pope St. Robert Bellarmine says, for men are not bound or able to read hearts, but when they see that someone is a heretic by his external works, they judge him to be a heretic pure and simple. It's the same way that you conclude that the Protestants you encounter are heretics. They haven't been excommunicated by name. You conclude that they are heretics based on the fact that they do not put themselves in line with the magisterial teaching of the church. They dissent from Catholic teaching. And so you don't need a statement from Rome saying that Joe Protestant here that I know, meet, he's outside the church. Okay? You don't need that. A Catholic with faith who understands the teaching of the church says he does not accept, he obstinately refuses to submit to the rule of Catholic faith. He is a heretic. That's what the church has always taught. That's what all the fathers of the church teach. That's what Pope Leo XIII says explicitly in Satis Cognitum. And so it's heresy to say that you can accept someone as Catholic. As long as he claims to be Catholic, he can believe in anything. Even if he dissents completely from Catholic teaching, that is heresy.
Well, I would say the cardinal could be simply guilty of a simple lie. And I don't believe that a lie puts a person outside the church. Once again, I've lied many times in my life. I've never considered myself outside the church as a result. I would say that the cardinal lied. I would say that a whole bunch of other people lied. I'd say, as the Bible says, all men are liars. Again, I feel, I judge, I hold and affirm that it is an act of injustice to accuse someone of apostasy without some evidence of internal conviction. Outside actions do not show internal conviction.
So you would have to admit that you believe that the Protestants you encounter who obstinately reject and hate what you would say about the Catholic faith could go to heaven.
Oh, no, of course not.
But on what basis?
Not on the basis. Not
how do you know? You can't read their heart.
Very good. Glad you brought it up. You can read a person's heart under one circumstance. You can read a person's heart when a person lies. And
exactly.
Owns a lie and does not reconcile or renounce the lie.
Exactly. That's the point. Anyone who refuses to submit to Catholic teaching is lying. Just like O'Malley lies when he claims to be Catholic, which entails submitting to the dogmatic teaching of the church, and then regards those who deny that as servants of Christ, that is lying. When Benedict XVI says that he believes in that Protestants don't need to submit to Vatican I, they don't need to accept it. He says that in his book, Principles of Catholic Theology, that the Protestants and the Eastern Schismatics do not need to accept the dogmatic teachings of Vatican I. He is lying, because Vatican I says the opposite. So it's the exact same thing. You prove the point when you admit that you can determine that the Protestants you encounter are of bad faith, they're evil in heart, they're of bad will, by their actions. Okay, that's how we know. They express the intentions of their heart by their actions.
No, I guess I wasn't clear. I'll try it again. When I'm talking about lying, I mean literally words of the mouth, and I don't mean actions at all. When I deal with Protestants, when I refute them or confound them, what I do is expose verbal contradictions. If a person does not resolve verbal contradiction, he's a liar. A lying status is something that can be read, by which one can read the heart. But one does not, in my opinion, lie by actions. One can be hypocritical, or one can be wrong with actions, certainly. What I'm saying is that the cardinal who praised Teddy Kennedy, and I didn't pay any attention to it, so I'm taking you, of course, at your word that, you know, it's a proper description. It was either lying or he's insane.
So let me ask you this. Do you think it's a conspiracy that he commemorated Teddy Kennedy, or do you think that really happened?
Oh, no, no. I believe it happened. I took your word for it, okay? All right. And I wouldn't be surprised if he got paid off. I wouldn't be surprised if the Kennedy family made a huge donation.
What do you think of this? Yeah. 1917 Code of Canon Law, Canon 188.4.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain causes which affect the tacit or silent resignation of an office, which resignation is accepted by operation of the law, and hence is effective without any declaration. These causes are if he has publicly fallen away from the faith. If someone publicly defects from the faith, without any declaration, he loses his office. That's the teaching of the church.
Well, it's canon law, which is not teaching of the church, but administrative procedures of the church.
No, but some canon law is rooted in divine law.
I have no doubt of that, but the problem is, this is like saying it's the church teaching that you can't be ordained before you're 24.
No, it isn't, because it's not at all comparable to that. It's a dogmatic truth, as I mentioned. okay, revealed by Christ, that you have to accept his faith to be in his church. And therefore, those who defect from his faith leave his church and cannot hold office in the church. So this canon law is an expression of the divine law. It's an expression of unchangeable, infallible truth that heretics cannot rule in the church because they're not even part of the church. As Pope Leo XIII says in Satis Cognitum number 15, 1896, no one, therefore, unless in communion with Peter, can share in his authority, since it is absurd to imagine that he who is outside can command in the church. And he goes on in that encyclical to explain how these bishops automatically leave the church when they defect from the faith. They have no authority in the church. That's dogma. That's something that, frankly, you just don't accept. That people who manifest heresy, doesn't matter if it was Hans Kung a Catholic. He claimed to be Catholic, yet he denied that Christ, he was like an Arian. He denied that Jesus Christ was fully God.
My turn?
Yeah, go ahead. That's the question. Was Hans Kung a Catholic?
I don't know.
I'm telling you, he denied that Christ was fully God.
I understand that. I'm sorry. Was he at any time a Catholic?
No. When he believed that, after he embraced that, did he remain Catholic?
I'll give you my opinion.
I'm asking you what you believe about that.
Well, I can only have an opinion, and my opinion was he never was, a Catholic.
Even though he claimed to be?
Yeah, sure. Claiming doesn't mean anything.
Okay, then you're admitting that people who claim to be Catholic, if they dissent from Catholic teaching, must be considered non-Catholic.
No, I did not admit that. I said that before, that this could be simply a sin. And a sin does not drive
no, when
sin,
you when,
put you in hell, but you'll be a Catholic in hell.
When you deny the faith, it's called heresy.
Oh yeah, I'm not denying that. Okay, I understand exactly what you mean.
Well, you are denying that. You're saying that it's a sin, even though he denied the divinity of Christ. It's not just a sin; it's a sin, but it's also heresy.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, therefore, people who deny the faith automatically cease to be Catholic.
No, I don't agree.
Well, that's heresy. And I've quoted Pope Leo XIII, Pope Innocent III, Pope Eugene IV, okay? I could quote Pope Pius XII in Mystici Corporis. He says that heresy, schism, and apostasy sever a man from the church. And he says that those who are divided from one another in faith or in government cannot be living in the unity of the same body. You cannot be in the same body, meaning the same church, if you are divided in faith. That's why it's called one holy Catholic and apostolic. There's one faith. So if Benedict XVI, your pope, you have the same faith with a man who agreed with the Lutherans on justification. You are Protestant.
See, syllogism is very interesting. You make assertions without, in my opinion, valid proof.
What didn't I prove?
And then from the assertion, you prove that conclusion, and then you use that conclusion to prove the assertion. It's the classic circular reasoning. The problem that I see, among others, which you have literally no chance of overcoming, is that if I understand, and by the way, I go back to it again, it seems to me that if the opinions of the saints are not in and of themselves automatically authoritative, they're unnecessary. Is that, would that be a correct thing to say?
No, I don't think so. That the opinions of the saints can provide insights and a direction and illumination on a particular topic, even if they aren't necessarily authoritative in themselves, unless they are rooted in a dogmatic definition.
Okay, do they add anything to the dogmatic definition?
They can add analysis and insight on how dogmas are to be applied and considered in certain circumstances.
Okay, so they are useful.
They can absolutely be very useful.
Okay, then that means that the judgments before this time were not necessarily completely clear?
Could you clarify the question?
Yeah, if the judgments of the various popes that you mentioned who may have made statements before these saints commented...
You mean on the loss of office issue?
Yeah.
Well, this goes back to the Great Western Schism era, because even in, we quote in our book, the theologians even back then, they said you can't reject, in trying to basically get out of that situation or understand the proper conclusion of that predicament, they said, well, you can't just reject the Pope who has been acknowledged by the cardinals unless he persists in open and persistent heresy. So even back then, back during the time of the Great Western Schism, before Bellarmine or Alphonsus Liguori, they recognized the concept that a heretic cannot be Pope. Okay, it's one of the most ancient concepts in the Church, that you are not in communion with those who are heretics. And this quote from Leo the Great, Sermon 129, really illustrates it. He says, "Wherefore, since outside the Catholic Church there is nothing perfect, nothing undefiled, we are in no way likened with those who are divided from the unity of the body of Christ. We are joined in no communion." And so of course a heretic can't be Pope, because...
That wasn't what I asked. What I asked was that the statements were not clear enough without the additions by the saints.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm saying that
I can prove it without citing any saint, but citing the saints adds something for those who respect their opinions or for those who want more analysis of how that applies to different situations and discussions of the history of the issue, the angles on that issue, how it's been shown in church history, etc. But all I need is Eugene the Fourth.
Okay. All right, so again, they're not really needed. They're just sort of extra decoration.
They're not absolutely necessary to prove the point, no.
Okay, so they're not necessary at all. There's no absolutes with necessary.
To prove the point that a heretic can't be Pope.
Not necessary.
How many times do I have to answer the question?
Okay, fine. Well, I didn't hear it yet. Okay.
Okay.
Now, you state this is an ancient teaching of the Church. Do you know when it was... As far as you're concerned, the first reference to it?
The first reference to the fact that you're not in communion with heretics goes back to the very beginning of the Church, that you must avoid a heretic, St. Paul said. Can I finish? Titus 3:10.
Okay.
You must avoid a heretic after the second rebuke. Okay? And so if anyone refuses to hear the Church, let him be... That's in Matthew 18:17, if anyone refuses to hear the Church, let him be to thee as the heathen. And so if someone refuses the Church, refuses Church teaching, he is to be considered as outside, separate, the heretic, the heathen. He's not to be considered your head, your leader, your Pope. That is repugnant to Catholic faith. It's repugnant to the unity of the faith and Christianity in general.
Does he become a heretic after he's rejected from the Church or when he commits the sin?
When he denies the teaching of the Church, he commits mortal sin and becomes a heretic at that very moment and ceases to be Catholic.
Okay. And so therefore, when our Lord in the Gospel of St. Matthew is telling people to confront them one at a time, he's already out of the Church?
When our Lord in the Gospel of Matthew is telling what people to confront whom?
You said if a, I think you were referring to...
Oh, you mean Matthew 18:17?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, he's saying that...
He's already out of the Church before he's confronted.
No, if he refuses to submit to the Church, he is outside the Church.
I understand. But these people who are confronting him with his heresy, he's still in the Church even though he's committed heresy?
If a person has rejected the teaching of the Church, he's not in the Church. Before he's rejected the teaching of the Church, he is in the Church.
Let's try it again, and maybe I get a yes or no answer this time. Before he's confronted... But after he's committed the sin, is he still in the Church?
No.
So he's already outside the Church?
By the fact that you said he committed the sin, which means he rejects the teaching of the Church. He's not in the Church.
Already outside the Church?
Yes. When you reject the teaching of the Church, you're outside the Church.
Okay. So when our Lord says the third time you talk to him and then have reject him, that's simply confirming something that already happened, correct?
Well, St. Paul's the one who says it. He says it in Titus 3:10. He says after the second rebuke, because that also entails whether you should avoid them.
I understand. But before the second rebuke, say, between the sin and the first rebuke, he's already out of the Church?
If he clearly rejected the teaching of the Church, absolutely.
Well, whatever St. Paul is referring to, you brought it up, whatever he's referring to.
I answered your question. You said before he has been rebuked by someone else, if he rejects the teaching of the Church, he's outside the Church.
I didn't say rejecting teachings of the Church. You keep saying that. I'd like you to answer the question the way I phrased it.
I answered the question.
All right, let's try it again. If he commits a sin, whatever it is, and he's not yet rebuked, is he already outside the Church?
Not if he commits any sin. It has to be heresy, schism, or apostasy.
Does it say heresy, schism, or apostasy in those two passages?
No, it doesn't.
So you're reading into it?
No, but as Catholics, we don't believe in sola scriptura. We believe, and Pope Pius XII and a host of other magisterial pronouncements teach us the real. Can I finish? Can I answer your question? They teach us the real meaning of those passages, which is that people are not severed from the church for fornication. Okay, they're not severed from the church for other sins of immorality. That puts them in a state of mortal sin. Okay, but they're severed from the church for heresy, schism, or apostasy.
Those passages do not say heresy, schism, or apostasy, do they?
No, they don't.
You're arguing.
Oh, actually, Titus 3:10 says heretic.
Okay. Is that the one that you mentioned about rebuking twice?
He says, avoid the heretic after the second rebuke.
Okay. But before that second rebuke, even before the first, is the man outside the church?
If he does what?
What do you mean?
Is he outside the church if he does what?
Whatever it is that they're rebuking him about.
Yes.
Okay, and the same thing with the guy in Matthew 18?
Right, because we're talking about someone who refuses to hear the church. And so it's pretty obvious, but I mean, like,
I guess I'm not making myself clear.
No, you are, but you're trying to refute it, and you can't because it's Catholic teaching, and truth is irrefutable. And so the bottom line is, there's some other things that I wanted to ask you, since you just asked me.
I didn't get an answer on this, so go ahead.
You didn't get an answer on it?
No.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't.
Well, that's a lie.
Okay.
Can someone be a Catholic if one respects a diabolical religion?
I have always a problem with the word respect, so I'd ask you to either substitute or to define it.
That means to show esteem or approval for.
Okay, now, good, now I understand what you mean. What was the question again?
Can someone be a Catholic if he respects, a.k.a., shows esteem or approval for a diabolical religion?
Yeah, he does it. Yeah, sure.
So you can be a Catholic if you esteem, you think it's approvable, it's something that's worthy of being approved, something that's worthy of esteem, a diabolical religion?
Oh, of course not.
Well, you just contradict yourself.
You simply asked me a question, can you be a Catholic and commit a sin? Of course you can.
Even if it's a sin where you respect a religion that's diabolical.
Absolutely. There's only one unforgivable sin. And even that doesn't...
Well, it all comes down to the fact that you do not accept Catholic teaching on heretics losing membership in the church. That's really a fact. I mean, that's just, you do not accept that. And so how are you any different from the Protestants or the Eastern Orthodox who reject Vatican I and the papacy when you reject, you know, Pope Eugene IV and Pope Innocent III and Pope Leo XIII and Pope Pius XII and the consistent teaching of the church for 2,000 years that heretics are outside the church? How are you any different from the Protestants?
Well, I'm different from the Protestants in many ways. We disagree on this particular issue.
But from the standpoint of the fact that you reject Catholic dogma, would you admit that you do reject Catholic dogma?
No, of course not.
Okay, is it a Catholic dogma that heretics cease to be Catholic?
No, not in my opinion.
So what does it mean, what does Pope Eugene IV mean when he says that all heretics are outside the church?
I say all heretics. This is an extremely, if you're dealing with a concept of universal, and a synonym for universal is not there, you cannot make the case. If I say thieves go to jail, I don't mean all thieves go to jail. And if I say thieves go to all jails, I don't mean that every jail has a thief in it. I mean, that's what I'm saying, but I would be wrong. If I say all thieves go to all jails, I would be wrong too. If I said, however, in general, thieves, when they're caught, are sentenced to jail, I'm making a general statement of a principle of punishment.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
What does Pope Eugene IV mean? Have you read the bull Cantate Domino?
I'm sure I have, but it sounded familiar to me when you read it.
The Holy Roman Church firmly believes, professes, and preaches that all those who are outside the Catholic Church, not only pagans, but also Jews or heretics and schismatics, cannot share an eternal life.
I agree.
So you agree that heretics are outside the Church?
Oh, I agree. Heretics cannot share an eternal life.
But it, and it says that
they cannot be saved as heretics.
And it says that they are what? Outside the church.
That's your reading of it.
Oh boy. Okay. And is the church of heretics? Would you agree with this? By the heart, we Pope Innocent the Third, profession of faith, 1208.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. Please repeat it.
Okay. Pope Innocent the Third, profession of faith, 1208. By the heart we believe, and by the mouth we confess the one church, not of heretics, but the Holy Roman Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
So is the church of heretics or not?
No, of course not.
So that means what? The heretics are not in the church?
No.
Well, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Again.
It says the church not of heretics.
I understand that.
What does that mean, Vin?
It means that the faith and the practice of church is not determined by heretics. In the same sense that laws, as I've argued against the laws that homosexuals advocate, laws should not be written by perverts. However, I'm sure there's perverts who are writing laws right now.
Well, but you actually believe that the faith and the practice of the church is determined by a heretic, Benedict XVI.
Oh, no, of course not. Even if he were.
So he's not a heretic.
Wait a minute. First of all, I don't know whether he's a heretic or not. As I pointed out before, and as I'll repeat again, there is not valid, believable evidence. There is circumstantial evidence. There are suspicions. My argument remains the same. It is a matter of justice when we're attacking someone's good name or even someone's bad name to have proof beyond mere suspicion, confirmation, rumor, and, shall we say, self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't have very strong feelings about the Benedict. However, I didn't like a lot of John Paul II, so I had a tendency to see him in a bad light.
Why didn't you like what a lot of John Paul II?
Because I felt that he should have been reforming instead of doing all this apparent worldwide.
But I thought you said earlier that he's just handcuffed by people around him.
No, I never said that. I said that Malachi Martin advanced that. I said that I thought his extreme position was rather silly, but what I said is we cannot dismiss the concept of a conspiracy and a prisoner of the Vatican automatically. We cannot do that.
But if you think it's silly, why would you bring it up in the context of exonerating him for his actions? And
I wanted to point out that one person who called himself a scholar on this claimed to have inside information and was, quote, popular and frequently considered an expert on Catholic and political internal matters.
But you didn't. But you think that's silly, so why would you advance it?
I said I thought it was silly to hold it as extremely as he did.
Oh, boy.
That's the same.
Here's the heart of the issue. Can you name one person who claims to be Catholic who is, in fact, not Catholic, but a heretic, and tell me why he's a heretic?
I probably could, but I think it would be calumny, so I don't think there would be good reason.
That's the point. You have to. That's the whole point I'm proving here, that your position is apostasy, because for many reasons, but it requires you to acknowledge, as inside the church, a person who believes anything. Anything. Okay? And let me ask you this. What could a person who claims to be Catholic do to be considered a heretic? Give me a scenario.
Oh, my gosh. Anything. You could deny the Immaculate Conception.
So if someone denies the Immaculate Conception, he's outside the church?
No, he's a heretic.
He's a heretic. Oh, well, Benedict...
Again.
Okay, let's work off that. So Benedict XVI, is the Council of Trent on the same level as the Immaculate Conception?
I'm not sure what you mean by same level.
As far as the dogmatic status of the teaching of the Council of Trent, you would agree that's the same as the dogmatic status of Ineffabilis Deus.
Yes, they're both part of dogmatic faith.
Right, so to deny one is equivalent to... it's not, worse to deny the Immaculate Conception.
Well, I think it is, but that's my...
It's no different from the standpoint of heresy. You would agree. It's equally heretical.
I don't know if they're equal. No, I wouldn't agree with that.
Oh, boy.
What's wrong?
That's heresy. That a person must believe with divine and Catholic faith all those truths which are proclaimed in the written word by the Church's solemn magisterium or in her ordinary and universal magisterium. That's the teaching of Vatican I. You cannot deny any dogma. It's not it's heresy to deny the Immaculate Conception, but it's acceptable to deny the Council of Trent. Do you see that that's ridiculous to assert that?
I never said that.
But you're not denying it. You're saying that you're not sure. You're not sure whether it's okay to deny Trent.
No, I never said that. I said it was a sin.
But you said categorically that to deny the Immaculate Conception is heresy.
Sure. It's wrong.
Okay, therefore you would have to say that to deny Trent is heresy.
I thought I did.
You said it's a sin. You refuse to say it's heresy. You're saying, I'm not sure. I'd have to look into it.
Heresy.
Okay, that's my point. Therefore, by virtue of the fact that you admit the guy who denies the Immaculate Conception is a heretic, John Paul II and Benedict XVI deny the Council of Trent and Vatican I. They are therefore also heretics.
I understand what you say. I simply do not accept it authority alone.
Well, anyone can research it. You can find the pictures of his representatives signing the Joint Declaration. You can see the pictures of them putting the pen to the paper, Cardinal Cassidy, okay, signing that the Lutheran agreement, faith alone is not condemned by Trent, all the other Lutheran heresies on justification, that you're at the same time justified and totally a sinner, it's all not condemned by Trent, according to John Paul II and Benedict XVI, the agreement they approved. Okay, so you have to admit they're heretics, but you won't. That's where you totally contradict yourself.
No, I don't admit something that I don't accept the truth of. Now, if what you're saying is correct, and by no means am I doubting your credibility, I believe that you believe you're correct. If what you're saying is correct, and if that document is as you describe it, and if his officials did sign something, then he allowed an evil thing to occur. But that's immensely different from causing an evil thing oneself. They're both sins, of course, but it's definitely different.
No, it isn't.
Those are big ifs.
Well, here's a point. Now, let's say, okay, God forbid, but let's say someone drew up a document denying the Immaculate Conception.
Hmm?
Okay? And his friend, you know, goes around saying, I approve this document. He didn't write it. But he goes around, you know, giving talks about how great the document is.
Uh-huh.
Is that friend there a heretic?
Sure.
Okay. John Paul II approved, so did Benedict XVI, approved what was written by Cassidy and approved under him. They've given speeches on it saying how great it is that it was signed. So it's no different. They're heretics.
Once again, that's if that you are proper.
Okay, so you would admit that if those are accurate statements, they are heretics. So basically, anyone can go verify that they actually did approve, okay, it's quoted in our book, it's quoted on our website, they actually did approve these agreements. That's just a fact. And so basically, you're admitting they're heretics, and once you admit they're heretics...
This is exactly the point under contention. Simply calling something a fact does not make it a fact. We are trapped by mass media, by internet lunatics, and by the fact that I hold that there are a large number of people who are in the mass media, both in and out of the official church, who are quite interested in trying to tear her apart. I argue that they will present things in the worst possible fashion. But I'm saying, again, think about this. The whole much of the homosexual priests, the molesters, the horrible scandal that took place, was completely misrepresented in the press. It was almost always represented as dealing with an adult man and a young boy, when it was almost always an adult man and a teenager. Is that acceptable? No, of course not. But it's immensely different. They were not cases of child molestation.
But there were cases of that.
That's why I said almost completely.
Well, but we're not talking about the, you know, ABC News or CBS or CNN. We're talking about the official Vatican newspaper. We're talking about the official documents of Vatican II. And have you seen the video footage of John Paul II at Assisi?
I saw some of it.
Okay, what do you think of that?
Oh, I thought what I saw was disgraceful. But I also thought at the time that it could, what occurred, especially with the Buddha statue, could absolutely have been defended.
The Buddha statue?
Yeah.
So someone can go into a Buddhist temple and bow before a statue of Buddha.
No, what I'm saying is the presentation of the Buddhist statue could have been stopped primarily only by physical force.
The what?
Could have been perhaps more of a scandal.
No, he went into the Buddhist temple of his own free will. He talked about how much he wanted to do it beforehand. You don't have a problem with that.
It was a Buddhist temple in a city?
It was a Buddhist temple in Bangkok, Thailand.
All right, I thought we were talking about a sissy.
No, no, that's there's so many different acts of apostasy. You could literally teach a course on it.
I misunderstood.
No, well, the Buddhist statue placed on the altar at Assisi, that's different. Okay, that's not even something worth mentioning. I mean, that's something he's responsible ultimately for, too. But he allowed at Assisi allowed animus. Okay, people who are engaged in, basically, trafficking of evil spirits. They're basically invoking evil spirits. He had this guy preach to his people. That is an act of apostasy, okay? The saints would immediately condemn this guy as a total antichrist apostate.
That's what happened. I condemn him too, but not as an apostate.
Well, that's why you deny that the church is one.
No, I'm simply denying the definition of the word.
Do you believe that heresy can be manifested by deed?
Well, sure.
Okay, so what...
Anything can be manifested by deed.
Do you believe that a forfeiture of the faith, a departure from the faith, a separation from the church can be manifested by deed?
Sure.
Okay, so how is not... he engages in the worship of the Muslims in a mosque toward Mecca. How is that not an act of apostasy demonstrating that you're not Catholic?
Because it may have been a phony act intended to please one's host. It may have been an extreme case of etiquette. Improper, of course. Sinful, of course.
That's ridiculous. That is absurd. But even if that were true, in the early church, the people who apostatized, even under threat of extreme torture, were considered outside the church. They weren't considered Christians. And in fact, some people were so appalled by the fact that they apostatized under threat of torture that they didn't even want them to be readmitted. Now, they were wrong. But the point is that they didn't even accept, as in the church, people who apostatized under threat of hideous, excruciating, mind-boggling tortures. And you're saying, well, he can pray toward Mecca in a mosque, like the Muslims, in a Muslim gesture, okay, because he didn't want to offend the Muslim infidel. That is ridiculous. I mean, it's so steeped in apostasy that I don't know what to say. I mean,
we really have to be careful with our words if we're going to argue technical points. When you say he can do it, of course he can. Ken talks about a physical ability. May he do it? Yes, he may. Is he permitted to do so by religion? No, he isn't. When we're talking about accusations, charges, sin, and things, similar things, we must be very precise in our language. You're not being very precise in your language.
How so?
And your endless repetition of the word absurd or ridiculous is not refutations. They're simply denials. They're simply assertions without proof.
No, well, I've already given the proof. You just keep denying it over and over again. And you deny the dogma that heretics are outside the church. And I said that he cannot do these things and remain Catholic. That's
allow
a fact.
Allow me, and if I may, an attempt at refutation.
Go ahead.
Excuse me, I'm trying to get a clarification of your position. Your position is, tell me if I'm wrong, please, that a pope loses his status when he becomes a heretic, even if it is only, say, an internal conviction. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, the internal conviction may not be manifested by some outward behavior. Is that correct?
I guess it's theoretically possible, but I'm not aware of any case in history.
I understand that. But the point is that one may be a heretic, and let's say one becomes a heretic 2 hours before he dies and doesn't have a chance to manifest it outwardly. Possible?
Possible.
Okay. Now, is it also possible that records of manifest heretical behavior of earlier popes were not recorded in history?
Can you repeat the question?
Is it possible that manifested, that is, physically outward behaviors of a heretical nature were not recorded in history?
No, it's not possible, because the goodness of the church, if you're basically supposing that you could have a privately heretical pope and he never manifested, no, the goodness of the church would require, God's goodness, that if someone were in fact a heretic, he would manifest that heresy, okay, so that the faithful could know. And furthermore, the church can supply jurisdiction to certain acts, okay, even of a heretical prelate, but he can't maintain the office. But furthermore, I would add that all of this is completely irrelevant, because John Paul II and Benedict XVI are not private heretics. They're as public as you can be. Okay, so it's really a divergence, and it's beside the point completely. to talk even about this, because we're not talking about public. We're talking about guys who publish these things in their encyclicals. They publish these things in their council. They publish them in their catechism. They demonstrate them in their trips to the buildings and the temples of false religions. Okay, so they're public as public can be. Another question I would ask you, are you familiar with Pope Innocent
III? A moment ago you said we're not talking about public. That was a misstatement, right? You didn't mean to say that.
If I said that, I didn't mean to say that.
Okay, fine. So we are talking about public things.
They are definitely public, yeah.
Okay, so what you're holding is the following. Any act by any heretical pope in roughly the last 2,000 years would not only have been noticed by other people, but would have been recorded in history. Is that correct?
I don't think that that's an accurate assessment, no. I would say that any manifestly heretical man claiming to be pope, okay, would have been noticed by people.
Okay, that wasn't what I asked.
That was what you asked, essentially.
Okay, would those actions, which in your opinion would have been noticed by people, would those actions necessarily have been recorded in history and be available to us now?
If someone was manifestly heretical, they would have been recorded in history. And in fact, the saints and doctors who surveyed papal history, they even look at all the cases of papal error and papal scandal, and they still concluded that there's nothing whatsoever that contradicts the truth that a heretic cannot be pope but would lose his office.
Was that a yes?
Your question was not phrased in a proper way to deliver a yes or no answer.
That those actions by previously heretical popes, which were noticed by at least some of the people of their day, must have been recorded in history and must be available to us.
Correct. If they were clearly heretical, quote, popes, which they would have been recorded in history and noticed by people. Yes, that's why Honorius, we have clear evidence of that. And so...
And wait. And you're saying this must be true because God would have ordained and mandated it.
Because God watches over the goodness of the church, and the church teaches that...
Is that a yes?
Yes, because, as I said,
good.
You like to ask some person the same question over and over again.
Is this a dogma of the Catholic Church?
Is what a dogma?
That God must force historians to record this, and God must preserve those historical records?
It flows from dogma. There are principles called dogmatic facts.
Yes or no, please.
Can I answer your question?
Yes. Well, yes or no.
I did. I answered. I said no. It's not a dogma, but it flows from dogma. There are dogmatic facts such as that flow directly from dogmatic truths and which are wrapped up in the promises of Christ to the church, and they're called dogmatic facts. But
And this is, in your opinion, a dogmatic fact?
Yes. So, but what is a dogma is that a heretic is not a member of the church.
So what you're teaching as a fact related to dogma is, in fact, your opinion. Is that correct?
No, it's not.
Not your opinion?
No.
I'm sorry, I asked before if that was your opinion that it was a dogmatic fact. You said yes.
No, you didn't, and I didn't say that.
Okay. I remember you saying yes. I'll ask you again. Is this your opinion that it is a dogmatic fact?
No, it's not.
Okay, so you hold it's not a dogmatic
fact. Right, I hold that it's inextricably bound up with the promises of Christ to his church.
And this is based on your own reasoning?
It's based on the teaching of the church.
Is a teaching in the church that mentions this?
It flows from a number of teachings that God would be with his church. You ask me questions and you don't let me answer them.
Well,
okay?
Answer yes or no. Is it mentioned?
Not all questions are yes or no. Just like when I asked you in the email, do you accept Vatican II? You said maybe, maybe not. Okay, so...
I'm asking about a simple fact. You were asking about my opinion. I gave my opinion and my opinion...
Vin, you're showing your bad will, and you are definitely of bad will, that you are diverting from the incontrovertible fact that heretics are not Catholic. That's a dogma which you reject, and that's why you're a heretic. And let me ask you a question. Do you believe that Pope Innocent...
By the way,
go ahead.
I simply allow me at this point to accuse you of diverting the conversation, so I'm not able to refute you. Go ahead.
That you just asked me 10, 15 questions. I get to ask you some questions.
Not number 19 destroys your position, but that's all right. Go ahead.
Say number 19?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you said I asked you about 15. I had about 4 more to go. But that's all right.
Okay, go ahead. Ask me 4 more, and then I'll ask you some more.
Okay. All right. It is your position, if I understand it correctly, dogmatically, that certain things have to be recorded, but it is also your position that this is not written anywhere or declared by any council. Is that correct?
What is declared by a council is that heretics are not members of the church. Okay, it's a dogmatic fact. You're going to have to let me answer the question, okay? Okay. Okay, dogma. It's a dogma of the church that heretics are not members of the church. And the dogmatic fact flowing from that is that heretics cannot be popes. It thus follows that if you ever had a heretic claiming to be the pope, the goodness of God, okay, would make sure that that was manifested so that the faithful would be able to reject that person. Okay, but even if you were to hold your position that he wouldn't manifest it, then someone wouldn't necessarily be culpable for following him unless it were manifested. But all this is completely irrelevant because John Paul II and Benedict XVI are manifest heretics.
Okay, I understand your position, and now I think you've made it clear, and I will consider that at least a response, if not a direct answer. Are you infallible when you make that statement?
I'm infallible when I reiterate the dogmas of the church. I'm infallible when the position that a heretic cannot be pope is, I'm definitely infallible when I say that, yes. Yes, I'm infallible when I say that a heretic cannot be the pope.
No, not what I'm asking. The mandated historical records which are preserved and passed down to us, therefore, is that an infallible statement?
That's not even a complete sentence.
Okay.
The mandated historical records that are passed down to us.
Yeah.
That's not a complete sentence.
No, you're correct, and I will correct it and thank you. Your position that these records will be mandated by God and preserved mandated by God and passed down to us, if they were ever to exist, is that an infallible statement on your part?
Yes.
Okay, good. Now, the point is, therefore...
Are you done, or you have some more questions?
Well, I have one... No, you know what? Go ahead.
Okay. Do you believe that Pope Innocent III at the Fourth Lateran Council, are you familiar with the first infallible definition, there's one universal church of the faithful outside of which no one at all is saved?
Yes.
You've probably read that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that's binding and infallible?
Sure.
On what basis?
A bunch of them. How many do you need?
Oh, I just would like one. The primary basis, why is it infallible?
It makes sense and it's rational, so therefore I don't need any further validation. Everything that's true is automatically infallible.
So if I say that something that makes sense, it's infallible. It's the equivalent to that.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with the papal office.
Oh, no, it would, but since I've already accepted it as true, I don't need a further validation.
Is it distinct in any way from, you know, a lesser speech that a pope would give?
You mean an authoritative status?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Yes, it certainly could be.
But you're not sure?
It depends. It depends on what the pope is talking about.
But you're familiar with what he's talking about. He's saying there's one universal church of the faithful outside of which no one all is saved.
Except that it's authoritative and infallible.
Say again?
I'm sorry. I accept it as authoritative and infallible.
And do you believe that it's distinct? Can it be rejected by a Catholic?
Not without terrible consequences.
What consequences?
Damnation, ultimately.
How about heresy?
A person who would deny that would be a heretic. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
That was my answer.
And based on what? Because it comes from a council? Is that the reason?
Based on the fact that it's a rejection of the teachings of the church.
But why is that a binding teaching of the church?
I don't know how to answer that. There's a certain point at which you can't answer a question, because it is.
But that doesn't explain why. That you can't just say it is. That doesn't prove it. That you have to... What's the criteria for a binding teaching of the church?
Well, there's a bunch of them.
Okay, go ahead.
One is essentially that it accords with a properly formed conscience. that it conforms with revealed revelation, that it conforms with formal tradition, that it conforms with formal council teachings, that it conforms with formal papal statements.
No, those are not the reasons, because someone, a doctor of the church, could say things that are in accord with revelation, that are in accord with a properly formed conscience. That doesn't make it binding, okay? So you don't know what you're talking about. A teaching of the church is binding, okay, if the magisterial authority is operating. And that is operating if the authority of the papal office is involved, okay? And so you admit, even though you can't explain it, that that's binding because what you really should say is that the authority of the papal office is involved, okay? That Pope Innocent III, speaking at an ecumenical council, that issued a decree on faith, and you can't reject that because that represents the teaching of the papacy, and to reject it is to cease to be one with the faith of the papacy and the faith of the church. Well, Vatican II, if you accept them as popes, is on the same level. Okay, Paul VI, the man you think is the Pope, who is an apostate, who thought that there was noble Islam, thought that Buddhism is a religion of salvation, on and on and on. He thought that the Islamic faith binds us to the one God, okay? That's apostasy. He officially approved and bound every document of Vatican II, and so the decrees on faith that Vatican II uttered would have to be binding in the same way of Innocent III. You agree?
No.
Why not?
Because Vatican II was declared to be a pastoral council, which without.
Where? Where was that? No, it wasn't. That's a myth.
I'm sorry. Maybe I'm incorrect. What I was saying is there are some doctrinal quotes within Vatican II, which I found acceptable. All right?
But the idea that it's a pastoral council is a myth.
Okay, perhaps I'm wrong. That's my impression.
Well, yeah, it's a myth that circulated among heretical false traditionalist groups like yours and the people you know that to try to, you know, maintain your untenable position. No, John the 23rd said that Vatican II was representing of a magisterium which is predominantly pastoral in character. He didn't say the council was pastoral. He said that it represents the magisterium, which is pastoral in character. So even John the 23rd in that very speech says it's magisterial, and the magisterium is infallible. And so Paul VI solemnly approved every document of Vatican II. Here's what he says at the end of every document. He says, each and every one of the things set forth in this decree has won the consent of the fathers. We too, by the apostolic authority conferred on us by Christ, join with the venerable fathers in approving, decreeing, and establishing these things in the Holy Spirit. And we direct that what has thus been enacted in council be published to God's glory. I, Paul, Bishop of the Catholic Church. So the, quote, Pope is solemnly approving, decreeing, and establishing what's in Vatican II. So you would agree you'd have to believe that.
I'm sorry, what are you asking me to believe?
Does that not prove that solemn papal authority was given to the documents of Vatican II, in your opinion? How?
Well, it's exactly the point. You use substitute verbs when you said, therefore, that solemnly decrees confirm.
So that's not solemn language, according to you?
Yeah. Once again, I go on the concept, as I've said before and as I say again, the translation of those things into English is not necessarily valid.
Oh, boy. Well, that is absurd, and anyone can consult the Latin, and I already cited the Latin, so I guess in the decree Nostra Aetate number 4, where it uses the same Latin verb, okay, we have the Latin text. And so,
how would you know you have the Latin text?
Because they've been published.
And my argument is that the people who publish these things are evil and altered the documents from the beginning.
Okay, so the versions that have been circulated in Latin and English, according to you, have been completely misrepresented. And it's a massive conspiracy at every level.
No, although it is a massive, it is. I say, as I said before, not that everything has been distorted. I don't know, but I do say everything is suspect, and I do say that there has been a conspiracy, and I do say that these things are suspect.
Well, the point is that by the very same criteria that you accept Innocent III's teaching as binding, you would have to, if you were logical, which you aren't, you would have to accept Vatican II as binding and its teachings on faith, including that the church is in communion with Protestants, that Islam is a decent religion, that Buddhism leads to elimination, on and on and on. Let me ask you this. Does the Catholic Church teach that non-Catholics may receive Holy Communion or not?
No, not.
Okay, well, your church teaches that they may. It's taught in Vatican II, Orientalium Ecclesiarum number 27. It's taught in the New Code of Canon Law. It's taught in the New Catechism. It's taught in John Paul II's encyclicals. It's taught in his Directory for the Application and Principles of Ecumenism. It's taught in his speeches. Okay, I mean, how many more times does he need to teach it? So you reject the teaching of your, quote, Pope?
If that's what he's teaching, of course I do.
Okay, well, that puts you outside...
I understood you correctly.
Well, that puts you outside of the communion with your own, quote, Pope.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, because you can't dissent from his official teaching.
Right.
And you do.
And the Catechism is not an official authoritative doctrine.
No, there's something called the Ordinary and Universal Magisterium.
Sure.
Okay. So when a Pope repeats something over and over again, it's the teaching of the Church, that represents the teaching of the Ordinary and Universal Magisterium. He's repeated in every form. I mean, what form do you want it in? It's been in a council, solemnly approved. We decree, define, and declare by our apostolic authority. It's been in his catechism, which was also solemnly approved. Okay, and I could give you the language on that. It's been in his Code of Canon Law. It's been in his encyclicals, officially published and taught. It's been in his speeches. He couldn't teach it in any other way.
Right. And of course he can teach error, except when he's teaching as, the...
Right, the magisterium, the Catholic Church's magisterium cannot teach error.
Well, of course. I'm
yeah, your position amounts to that the Catholic Church teaches heresy.
No, I didn't disagree with your position.
No, but you're not going to agree with anything, because you're of bad will. But that's what your position means, okay? That's what it equates to, and anyone listening is of good will... can see that's what your church teaches. That's a fact. That's what he believes. Is it heresy for someone to believe that it's lawful for non-Catholics to partake in the Eucharist?
I'm sorry.
He believes that you can partake in the Eucharist and
I reject that position.
Is that heresy?
I'm sorry. I was speaking when you were speaking.
Is that heresy?
Good question. I believe it's an error. I don't know if it's heresy.
It's definitely heresy, because okay. Pope Eugene IV defined that all those who are outside the church can't be saved and they cannot benefit from the sacraments, okay? And so to give people communion who are outside the church is to give communion to those who are in mortal sin. It is an evil teaching, it is heresy, and it conflicts with the dogma that there is no remission of sins outside the church, that you can only benefit from the sacraments in the body. So it's another heresy that he holds, but according to you, none of this matters.
Once again, the word cannot is understood in two completely different fashions. That's why we have to be very careful about these things.
Say again?
Words cannot, can be understood, are understood in two completely exclusive different ways. When you say one cannot benefit from the sacrament, that may mean permission. It may also mean punishment.
No, it's a dogmatic truth that you have to be in the church, okay?
That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, it is what we're talking about. You're completely wrong. We're talking about the dogmatic issue of whether someone can benefit from the sacraments inside the church, and that is directly connected with what the church teaches about who can receive the sacraments or who may receive the sacraments. And so he teaches that it's lawful, okay? It can be done in a justifiable fashion for non-Catholics to receive communion. That alone would win the debate. That alone would prove he's not Catholic.
I'm sorry, I thought I held my position in the beginning that once a man becomes the Pope, he remains the Pope. I didn't make that clear?
I understand that's your position, and I'm pointing out that it's heretical. That you believe...
I understand, you keep saying that.
You believe once a I already proved it, because I quoted the dogmas that people leave the church through heresy, schism, or apostasy. You reject that teaching. That's just a fact. Let me ask you this. Can someone be a Catholic or remain in the church if he considers the spread of Judaism to be a good thing?
Sure.
Okay, so you can deny Christ and be in the church. Is considering the spreading of Judaism equivalent to denying Christ, if I think it's great that Judaism is being spread, is that equivalent to a denial of Christ?
No.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
How would you not agree with that? If he thinks that it's good that the Jews spread their denial of Christ, okay, if he thinks that's a good thing, that is a denial of Christ. And he commemorated the synagogue. Okay, he actually, we have this quoted in our book. He sent representatives to the commemoration of the synagogue, and I just wanted to make sure to quote that here. On May 23rd, 2004, he sent a message to the chief rabbi of Rome, and he joined them and celebrated the 100th anniversary of the, quote, Great Synagogue in Rome. And he said, it can boast of being the most ancient Jewish community in Western Europe and of having played an important role in spreading Judaism on this continent. So he says it. You can boast of spreading Judaism. It's a good thing. He says he sent them there on a Sunday, okay, in the synagogue. He says, today's celebration, in whose joy we all readily join. Okay? And he says, the Christian community of Rome, through him, joins you in thanking the Lord for this happy occasion, the anniversary of the synagogue. So he's encouraging them in the practice of Christ denial, in the practice of Judaism. And he goes on to say more of the same. He also gave a menorah to the children of Jerzy Kluger, his Jewish friend. Well, actually, it was his Jewish maestro. Here it is. Gilbert Levine, he gave a menorah to his children, congratulating them for their bar mitzvahs, and he had his, quote, Cardinal Casper send them a letter on the occasion of the bar mitzvah, which told them to live out their Judaism to the fullest extent. So that's not apostasy, according to you. So if I did that, if I tomorrow went out and congratulated people, started, you know, congratulating people for spreading Judaism, started sending letters to people for their bar mitzvahs, would I be remaining in the church?
Yes.
Well, that is a church of apostasy. That's what I'm saying, Vin. That is apostasy. You do not believe the church. How is one in faith if someone who believes that is in the church with those who believe in Catholic teaching? How is the church one in faith? It's not. It's not one in faith. That's why what you're saying is rejected by Catholic teaching. And that really pretty much sums it up. I don't know if there's more you wanted to say on this or some other angles or if you wanted to just make a closing. Or
let me make one quick point, and if you can respond to it, fine. Otherwise, we'll go to this closing statement. There's a record in the Gospels in the second epistle of Galatians. In Galatians chapter 2, where St. Paul references that St. Peter did something rather scandalous, and yet we certainly do not have any record of St. Peter losing the status of Pope. How would you deal with that, or have you considered that?
Yes. Clement of Alexandria, writer in the early church, and this is also quoted by Eusebius, who was the author of the very first church history. They doubt that was even St. Peter, because it refers to Cephas, and there was another Cephas who was one of the 70 disciples of our Lord mentioned in Luke 10, so it's not even clear that it was St. Peter. So that's not even clear. Furthermore, he refused to eat with the Gentile converts who hadn't undergone circumcision, Cephas, whoever it was, and that is not tantamount to what we're talking about. That would be, you know, maybe a bad decision and something that was imprudent and, you know, wasn't the best thing to do. However, it's not equivalent to what we're talking about here, teaching that Lutheran teaching on justification is acceptable, rejecting the Council of Trent, teaching that Protestants shouldn't be converted, teaching that there's salvation without believing in Christ, which they've said, engaging in interreligious apostasy with animists, praying with every religion you can think of, teaching that non-Catholics may receive Holy Communion, so it's not comparable.
Okay. I appreciate the response.
Okay.
Okay. Then I will make a brief closing statement, okay? Briefly, I hold that your position depends on several things. Number one is an assumption then seeking evidence for the assumption, and then selecting the evidence to come to a conclusion. This is a perfectly normal thing to do for, say, prosecutors in criminal courts when they're convinced that the person they're prosecuting is guilty. However, it's not a proper thing to do when we're accusing people of serious sin. My position is, my position was, and probably still be until I'm talked out of it or shown where it's invalid, that in order to accuse someone of serious sins, one which require essentially internal convictions, we need more than circumstantial evidence. What I'm also saying is that although some of the statements and teachings that you offered absolutely give some, preliminary, not conclusive, support to your position, they do not support your position. Almost every time I brought up a qualification or a request or an objection or answered a question, I was simply matched with, it's absurd. My position is as follows. Sin does not, ordinary sin, does not drive a person outside of the church. What drives a person outside of the church is the voluntary decision to do so. And until the person does that, he is still within the church. That has to be an act of the will, and we can't judge the acts of will of other people except under certain very specific circumstances, such as I detailed by lying. Therefore, what I would say is the same thing I said essentially in the beginning. The case is not proven. And one minor point on my conspiracy thing. There was a movie which was offered as a documentary recently by a very rabid anti-Catholic atheist named Bill Maher, who's a comedian. And one of the things he did was he went to the Vatican and he came across the Latinist. Interestingly enough, this priest is an American, apparently is the guy who does the official translations. And I saw an excerpt from this movie. And this priest was on film denying things like the Virgin Birth and the whole nativity story, saying we only keep that alive for the idiot Italian women, otherwise we can't get money from them. Now, this is a high-ranking Vatican official who apparently is in charge of translating things from Latin, and he's denying the faith on film and isn't even afraid of it. I'm not saying that this proves a conspiracy. I'm not saying that it proves that everybody in the Vatican is evil. However, it does add evidence to my position. And when evidence on both sides is, shall we say, speculative rather than definitive, then I think the decision always has to be on the side of not guilty. Thank you for the time, and thank you for allowing me the closing statement.
Okay, and I would respond by saying that we've clearly proven that the church teaches that heretics are not members of the church. That's centrally the issue here. That's what you deny, and I'll quote, you said that sin doesn't cause a man to leave the church. Well, the sin of heresy does. Pope Pius XII and the crime of heresy. Pope Pius XII, Mystici Corpus Christi, June 29, 1943, number 23. For not every sin, however grave it may be, is such as of its own nature to sever a man from the body of the church, as does schism or heresy or apostasy. So directly contrary to what you said, heretics cease to be part of the church. I quoted many things. What I said was absurd is the notion that all of this, even though we're quoting the official Vatican newspaper, we're quoting the official Vatican II documents, we're showing their actions, we're quoting their official speeches translated by their own people. We cited Latin. I referenced the use of the same Latin word that the Council of Florence used in Nostra Aetate number 4 to teach exactly the opposite. That's absurd and insane to say that this is not what they're saying at all when it's confirmed by their very actions. That is insane. And I didn't just say it's insane. I proved it's insane by those facts, and I proved that the position is absurd by citing Pope Eugene IV, that all heretics are outside the church. And Satis Cognitum, I cited earlier, where he says that if anyone holds to a single one of these heresies, he is not a Catholic. And you said, well, it depends on what heresies. And, well, in that very sentence, he says, for there may be or arise some other heresies. So it doesn't matter what the heresy is. A heretic is not a Catholic. That's what you don't accept, because the church is one in faith. Are they heretics? I mean, you'd have to be a complete liar to deny it. They agreed with the Lutherans on justification, said that their view of justification is not condemned. They teach that we shouldn't convert Protestants. Okay, they teach that the leading schismatic Orthodox are in the church. They praise their churches. They give, John Paul II gave a donation to their churches. They teach that non-Catholics may lawfully receive Holy Communion. They teach that the Jews' covenant with God is still valid. They say that over and over again. John Paul II calls them the people of the covenant. Paul VI says Islam binds us to the one God, a diabolical religion. The church teaches that Islam is a diabolical religion. John Paul II kissed the Quran, thanked people for the developing of Islamic culture. Benedict XVI called the Quran a holy book, said, expressed his deep respect for Islam. They constantly respect false religions. They constantly teach salvation outside the church. They are apostates. The church teaches that heretics can't be popes. This whole situation is predicted. It's called the Great Apostasy. It's predicted in Scripture. Jesus said that there will be such a deception that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. And St. Paul talks about the man of sin sitting in the temple of God. We have Our Lady of La Salette who said Rome will lose the faith and become the seat of the Antichrist. We've had over 40 anti-popes in history. We've had anti-popes in Rome. We've had an anti-pope who was acknowledged by all the cardinals. Okay, Anacletus II, an anti-pope, reigned for 8 years in Rome. And so if all of those were just a lead-up, a prelude to the Great Apostasy, what will the deception involved in the Great Apostasy actually be? It will be even more profound and even more devastating for people. And so it's very obvious that if you believe at all in Catholic teaching, you will take the position that they're heretics, and that leads inescapably to the conclusion that they're not popes. To deny that is just to be of bad will. They're anti-popes. And the position that they are popes leads you to the conclusion that the Catholic Church teaches that non-Catholics may lawfully receive communion, complete religious indifferentism, on and on and on. And I didn't even get into the heresies of religious liberty, how Vatican II and these anti-popes directly contradict what the Church has taught on the issue of religious liberty and so many other things. So it's pretty simple to someone of goodwill, but the problem is there's almost no one of goodwill today. And that's what I would say.
Okay.
All right. So that's about it, I guess.
All right. I wish you good luck and God bless.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take it easy.